From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. A group of young Native Americans, including a member of the Omaha tribe who lives in Sioux City, has filed a suit to deny the Washington Redskins trademark protection for their name because they say it's racially offensive. In our first half hour, we discuss the roots of Indian imagery in American sports with anthropologist Christina Gish Burns of Iowa State University. Then, up until last week, the UNI men's basketball team boasted one of the longest winning streaks in the country. What's the secret to the Panthers' success? I'll talk with head coach Ben Jacobson and player Adam Cook. That's all coming up right after a look at the news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In November of last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it would not review a 17-year-old legal challenge by the National Congress of American Indians that the nickname of the National Football League's Washington Redskins is so racially offensive that it does not deserve trademark protection. However, another group of challengers, a group of young Native Americans, including a Sioux City resident who is a member of the Omaha tribe, has filed a similar trademark cancellation suit in hopes that they can change the final verdict on the use of the Redskins' name. Well, they're certainly not alone when it comes to the fight over the use of Indian-related sports names and accompanying mascots. About 20 colleges have been urged by the NCAA to drop names considered disrespectful to Native Americans. Here in Iowa, Simpson College changed its nickname from Redmen to Storm. That was back in the early 90s, while Indianola High School's remains the Indians. This half hour, we want to dig into this great debate over Native American sports names and mascots with my guest, Christina Gish Burnt of Iowa State University. She's a lecturer in anthropology. Since 2003, Burnt has spent her summers studying the Northern Cheyenne people in Montana for her research on the expression of sovereignty in American Indian communities. She's the author of a chapter on sovereign Native nationhood in the book Tribal Worlds, Critical Studies in American Indian Nation Building. That's to be published this spring. Christina Gish Burnt joins us from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Ames this afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
This is a fascinating topic. Glad to talk to you about it. Now, in November, we mentioned the U.S. Supreme Court said it would not review this 17-year-old legal challenge by the National Congress of American Indians. What is the argument used by the National Congress of American Indians in this case?
Well, basically, they're arguing that the mascot of the Redskins is so racially offensive that it doesn't deserve protection as a trademark. And they're arguing that that's why the Supreme Court should hear the case.
Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't get protection, presumably the trademark would be destroyed or could be used by anybody. So the Redskins would have to get another trademark?
Exactly. The idea is to force the Redskins to cease using the mascot, the Redskins.
Right. They profit a lot from all the things related to the Redskins. So if they can't trademark it, then it's not commercially viable anymore. What is the significance of the U.S. Supreme Court saying it would not review it?
Well, actually, it's an interesting decision because basically the Supreme Court decided that they wouldn't review it because the case hadn't been brought up in a timely enough fashion. So basically they're saying that it doesn't deserve review.
On a technicality.
On a technicality, as opposed to dealing with the issue of whether the term is derogatory and racially charged.
Mm-hmm. So you foresee perhaps that the U.S. Supreme Court, when this technicality at some future date is put aside, that they would address it perhaps or find another excuse not to maybe.
Potentially. Certainly, the Native groups that are working to force change in terms of this mascot issue are going to keep trying to bring cases before the Supreme Court and before lower courts. And we'll just see what the Supreme Court does at a future point in time. If potentially, if they could encourage the court to look at it from a civil rights perspective, maybe there will be a different ruling, but we'll just have to see.
Can you see any reason, reading behind the lines with your expertise, why this court, the Roberts Court, would not want to take this case?
That's a good question. My sense is that coming at the case from, basically the argument, basing the argument on the technicality of a sort of statute of limitations is a way for the Supreme Court to essentially get around addressing the racially charged nature of the team name and not discuss whether this is a civil rights issue or not. And so,
Okay. Now, as I mentioned in the outset, about 20 colleges have been urged by the NCAA to drop names considered disrespectful to Native Americans. Let's see, some of these names, not necessarily college names, but names around the country. Can we list a few of those?
That have been encouraged to drop their names or that have dropped their names?
Well, that I guess still exist
sure.
That have Native American references or mm-hmm. mascots.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, there's several out there. A famous one is the Seminole of Florida State University. University of North Dakota is in great controversy right now over their mascot, the Fighting Sioux. Let's see. William and Mary is working right now to change their mascot from the tribe to a new mascot. Mm-hmm. There's also, I think it's the University of Utah, the Utes. So there are still several out there.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a number of other ones, the Cleveland Indians. They have Chief Wahoo, mm-hmm. The Atlanta Braves, a long controversial name there. I want to talk about the Florida State University Seminoles in just a moment, because that's really an interesting case. But outline the reasons, past just being disrespectful, why Native Americans and I suppose other Americans want these names changed.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could say you can make it a case for honoring them as well as disrespecting them, can't you?
Mm-hmm. So you hear that argument often. For example, the Fighting Illini, University of Illinois, you hear the argument that Chief Illiniwek, their old mascot who's now been retired, is honoring the indigenous population of the state of Illinois. For Native people, these mascots, I mean, certainly there's the issue of the mascots being racially charged, but really, and a lot of Native people argue that, look, these mascots are stereotyped representations of who we are as people. They're very one-dimensional. They either represent Native people as bloodthirsty savages or as a noble Indian kind of stereotype. And I think a bigger issue here is not just the stereotype, but the fact that for a lot of these mascots, Native people are not in control of the representation. So this is certainly true for a mascot like the Redskins mm-hmm. or the Cleveland Indians.
The exception to this, the Seminoles of Florida State University. In fact, we have a little clip from their promotional video taken off the web. Now, the Seminole tribe in Florida sanctions Florida State University's use of Seminole as the school nickname. In fact, they have also the Chief Osceola, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Seminole chief bearing a spear, riding a white horse named Renegade. He goes out into the field and throws his spear into the field. Let's listen to a little bit of this promotional video from FSU, Florida State University Seminoles, talking about the use of the Seminoles as their mascot.
The history and spirit of an unconquered people provides the guiding light for Florida State University students, faculty, friends, and supporters. Proudly using the name Seminoles, our student athletes work in the classroom and on the playing field to reflect the bravery, pride, and unyielding resistance to oppression that has characterized the Seminole tribe of Florida.
an unyielding stance toward repression. Now, that's a no one can deny that Chief Osceola of the Seminoles, who goes out onto the field, is a stereotype representation of Indian imagery. Christina, but this is certainly a different take on it, isn't it? Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the Seminoles at Florida State, this mascot was constructed in collaboration with the Seminole Nation of Florida. And so the Seminole people have had a major say in the way that that mascot looks, the way that he's represented. Also, the Seminole, I think it's also important to note that the Seminole have a financial stake in this mascot, i.e. they are able to support the university financially. And so basically because they're able to do that, that also helps them have a stronger voice and a stronger say in the way the mascot gets represented.
So the issue of control, one thing, how it's represented, and also partaking in the profit from this as well. So interesting perspectives, but still not everybody agrees?
Absolutely. And I think it's very important to note that this issue does not simply divide along the lines of Native versus non-Native. There are plenty of Native people who support certain mascots. I mean, the Seminole example is a good one. The issue at UND right now, whether they're trying to keep the Fighting Sioux mascot and logo, Native communities in the state of North Dakota are divided over this. Basically, the state said if the university gets the support of the Native communities in the state and works in collaboration with them on the mascot, then you can keep the mascot. If you don't, the mascot needs to go. And one of the reservations, Spirit Lake, has voted for the mascot. The other reservation, Standing Rock, has voted against it. So as you can see, not all Native people agree about these issues either.
Okay, we're talking with Iowa State University American Indian Studies faculty member Christina Gish Berndt. She's a lecturer in anthropology at ISU. And when we come back, we'll continue talking about this debate over the use of Native American nicknames and mascots on sports teams. Is it an honor or an insult to name a college or a high school sports team after Native Americans? Under what conditions should it be done? We'd like to hear your comments and questions. 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Let's go into this break with a little bit of the fight song from Florida State University's Seminoles. We'll be right back in just a minute. Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be talking live with University of Northern Iowa Panthers basketball head coach Ben Jacobson and their forward Adam Cook talking about the winning season featured this week on the cover of Sports Illustrated. That coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, talking about the fight over the use of Indian-related sports names and accompanying mascots. About 20 colleges have been urged by the NCAA to drop names considered disrespectful to Native Americans. Talking with ISU American Studies faculty member Christina Gish Berndt. And before we go to calls, Christina, I wanted to have you give us some historical perspective on the use of Indian names and imagery by non-Native people. How did this start? How far does this go back in American history?
Actually, it goes to before the Revolutionary War. In American history, when colonists were using representations of American Indian people to denote themselves as separate from Britain. And you see this in political cartoons of the time period where the colonies are represented as an Indian person, and anybody today would recognize the stereotypical markers of Indianness in these cartoons. So long black hair, a feathered headdress, a breech clout, and the image shows the colonies as like an Indian in the sense that it's strong, it's independent, and also they often show the Indian in these depictions as oppressed by a tyrant, which is Britain, who's often represented as overfed, as weak in the sense of sort of flabby and fat, right?
Right. So the white bloated European there. Interesting
exactly.
That at the same time that American people are pushing Native Americans westward, putting them on reservations, calling them savages, that they're also idolizing them as well.
Absolutely. And this gets at the representation of both the bloodthirsty savage on the one hand and the noble savage on the other hand. And it's a complicated stereotype for Indian people because Americans use both at the same time to think about Indian people. However, both are stereotypical representations. So this noble savage, which is actually when people say, oh, these mascots honor Indian people, they're really looking at the noble savage stereotype. But it's still a stereotype, even though it's independent, strong, one with the earth, the ability to live in the wilderness successfully. Mm-hmm. But it's still one-dimensional, and so it's still a stereotype.
Lots of people want to talk about this issue. Let's first go to Jeff in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I recently came to Iowa. I lived in Oklahoma for a long time. And as you know, probably the state with the highest number of Native Americans. This isn't even an issue there.
Hmm.
You know, every other high school is, you know, the Indians, the Braves, the tribe, even, the, you know, the savages, red men and redskins. And, you know, it's not an issue at all, except maybe a small percentage of the Indian community.
Well, it didn't used to be here either, Jeff, until a generation or two ago. Christina, are there regional differences here? Seems to be.
I think that there are regional differences, and I think that there's another thing that's going on here. For example, Haskell University has as their mascot still today the Fighting Indians. And Haskell University is it was originally a federal Indian boarding school. Today it's a Native institution of higher learning. And they continue to use Indians as their mascot. And for a lot of people there, basically they argue, well, we are Native people, and so this is a point of pride for us. However, of course, other Native people say, look, you're still drawing on the same old stereotypes. So it's a very complicated issue. And I think that actually for some Native people, when they use Indians as mascot for their own school or Braves or Warriors, it can be a point of pride. However, they're in control mm-hmm. of the representation.
I was looking online today in the neighborhood I grew up across the way. One of our big crosstown rivals, West Waterloo, the Wahawks. Looking on their website, they have a little bit of information here. They have their logo is a block W, but it has a feather trailing from the bottom. And it says on the website, the school mascot initially was a student dressed in Indian attire. But now more recently, the school has adopted Westy, a hawk-like character. And so there are some ways to compromise here so that their logo, the way the mascot is represented on the field or the court, is less objectionable or not objectionable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Let's go to Jim in Spencer. Jim, welcome to The Exchange.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Yes. You know, I think that people really need to be aware of the kind of images that they are promoting for their mascots, especially if they're making someone look silly or foolish in the way that they're depicted. But I would also point out that, you know, we're all human. If you look at ledger art, for example, the artists take a lot of delight in showing white people being massacred in all kinds of horrible ways. And that is considered a good art form that is now collected and valuable today. And it's really a horrifying depiction of the kind of attacks that were taking place. And I would also point out that even the Indians were using different forms of mascots without their permission. You know, maybe they were just animals or other elements, but we all do this kind of thing, and I think it's only human nature.
Okay, Jim, thank you for your view from Spencer. Let's go to Elizabeth in Waterloo. Hi, Elizabeth. Were you a Wahawk? Were you a Wahawk?
No, I was not. I'm actually a graduate of Central Michigan University.
Mm-hmm.
They use the nickname Chippewa, but there is no mascot, and there's no representation of anything to do with any Native American symbols or any representation on the campus. There was a lawsuit in the late 80s brought against the university about the use of the mascot, and the Saginaw Chippewa Indian tribe actually stood up with the university and defended their use of the nickname.
Hmm. Okay, so that debate has been put to rest in Central Michigan, at Central Michigan University.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So another case of the treatment being the important thing here. Let's go to Iowa City. Is it Tex?
Yeah.
Hi, Tex. We've got just a couple minutes left. What do you have to chip into this debate?
Well, I totally agree with this. I mean, I'm looking at my family. You know, we're a bunch of cowboys, and we've been having a lot of problems with the racial stereotypes, the cowboys, the buckaroos. You know, my wife, she's Norwegian, and as a Viking, she doesn't believe that that's right either.
Well, now, when you say you're a cowboy, are there any ethnic cowboys out there?
Ethnic cowboys? Well, I mean, you know, calling us buckaroos, you know. Really, the way that they depict us in a lot of these, a lot of the mascots that they have out there, it's a total stereotype of the cowboy myth.
I see what you mean. So the Vikings, the people in Northern Europe should be offended perhaps at the Vikings and the way that's portrayed if you go to a Vikings game, huh?
Exactly. My wife is totally upset about this, the way that they depict her people, you know, bloodthirsty and all that. It's
the
ridiculous.
Norsemen. Really? Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. Christina, what do you have to say about that?
That is an interesting perspective. Actually, this is something that my students like to bring up in the classroom. When I talk about the mascot issue, they say, well, what about the Vikings? What about the Cowboys? What about the Saints? And certainly, again, these are stereotypical images. I suppose one could argue that, well, a lot of people in Minnesota are of Norwegian descent, and they feel that this is part of their background and heritage, and so in that way they're representing themselves and they're in control of their own imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, and one thing I would like to note is that these mascot issues, when you have a very stereotyped representation of an Indian person, particularly on college campuses, can really cause a lot of problems. For example, I've heard about student associations when, back in the day, when Chief Illini was the mascot at University of Illinois, student associations at rival colleges hanging effigies of Indian people from trees in nooses. Mm. And so then when you have Indian students on campus who are walking past this, that's very emotionally difficult.
That's where the fun and games stop.
Exactly. I mean, it can be a very emotionally charged situation. So I think it is something that we really need to be careful of and aware of the problems that it can cause.
Christina, we'll leave it there. We've run out of time. Christina Gish Berndt of Iowa State University, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Up until last week, the UNI basketball team boasted one of the longest winning streaks in the country. They certainly have no debate about their name or the success of their basketball team this year. When we come back, we'll talk about the secret to the Panthers' success with head coach Ben Jacobson and their forward, Adam Cook. When we come back, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Up until last week, UNI, the University of Northern Iowa men's basketball team, boasted one of the longest winning streaks in the country. After a Sports Illustrated story, not a cover story, I misspoke earlier. After that story, they lost to Wichita State and this week fell out of the AP Top 20. I want to look at the secret of the Panthers' success. Ben Jacobson is the head coach of the UNI men's basketball team. The Panthers are 17-2 overall, 8-1 in the Missouri Valley Conference. Also joining Ben, Adam Cook. He is a senior who plays for UNI. He's a forward from Wisconsin, earned first-team all Missouri Valley Conference honors. They join us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls. Ben and Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Coach Jacobson, let's start with a look at your team. Great start to your 2009-2010 season. Describe the strengths of this year's Panther team.
Well, I think one of the biggest strengths for our basketball team is the experience that we have. And we've got a great group of seniors with Adam Cook and Jordan Eagle-Cedar and Ali Farouk Manash. Those are the three guys that start for us. And then Brian Hake and Adam Rodenberg are two of our seniors that haven't played as many minutes this year, played some significant minutes for us a year ago as juniors. And those five guys have really done a great job with the leadership of our team and the chemistry of our basketball team. And, you know, anytime you've got those things coming from your best players, that certainly makes things easy on you as a head coach and on your coaching staff when the guys take a lot of responsibility in terms of the leadership and chemistry. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that has driven the success that we've had. And it's also a very unselfish group. They work extremely hard, but they're very unselfish when it comes to the offensive end of the floor, and that's helped us.
Defensively, the Panthers rank in the top 10 nationally in scoring, defense, and turnovers. So how do you coach for taking care of the basketball in this way?
Well, fortunately, we've got some guys on our team that handle and pass the basketball pretty darn well. And, that certainly helps. They've got a good understanding of how to play offense. You know, they've got a good feel for how to play. Again, they're extremely unselfish, and because they do have some experience, they understand the importance of taking care of the basketball. And so really, I don't spend a lot of time having to talk about taking care of the ball or making sure that we get a good shot. These guys do a great job of doing those things, and I think largely because they had some success last year as a team that did a good job of taking care of the ball and making sure that we found a good shot each trip down the floor. And I'm so fortunate that we don't have to spend a lot of time working on or talking about those two things in terms of taking care of the ball or finding a quality shot. And when the guys have a good feel for how to play, they seem to take care of those two things.
So a big, long winning streak, one of the longest in the country. Then came the Sports Illustrated article. Were you thinking beforehand, oh, no, this might be a jinx?
Somebody asked me about that, and I said, we don't need to worry about it because we're not going on the cover. And I saw what Adam said in the paper following that as well. And he said, simply said, look, I don't believe in that. And I'm more on Adam's side of that. That's not something that I guess I necessarily buy into. We ended up playing against a very good team in Wichita State. They've got a terrific basketball team and at their place, of course. We didn't play quite well enough in the first half. A lot to do with the way Wichita played. And then I give our guys a lot of credit. We came out in the second half and we were terrific. We got the game to a 2-point game early in the half, and it was a possession game the rest of the way in, and we just didn't take advantage of a couple of opportunities. Wichita State did, so they got the win, and then I liked how we bounced back. The guys really mm-hmm. practiced well, and we went and got a win on Sunday at Indiana State, and anytime you win on the road, you've done something well.
Let me ask you, Adam Cook, as a forward for the Panthers, it's pretty hard when you go into any game, Wichita State, or any game when you're featured in a Sports Illustrated article, not to have that on your mind. You can't say that it wasn't on your mind going onto that court, can you?
It's something that we enjoy having. I mean, we like being ranked. We liked having the article. I mean, those are nice things for our team to be recognized like that. But it's not something that, you know, we pride ourselves on just being ranked or anything like that. I mean, it's not going to help us win any games to, have that ranking or that article. So we do. I think we, as a team, we do a pretty good job of just kind of putting that on the side and not really paying too much attention to it and staying pretty focused.
We have Coach Jacobson with us and Adam Cook of the Panthers for the rest of the hour. If you have a question or a comment for them, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Questions about Panthers basketball, or you can email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. I understand, Adam, that you and a couple of your teammates were identified in the article as major movie buffs. The Siskel and Eberts of the Panther team. What's going on there?
Myself and then Ali Farouk Manesh and my brother Jake Cook, we all lived together in a house off campus. And I guess one of the things, we were bored one day and decided that, we wanted to watch some movies. And we started talking about, you know, what we liked and what we didn't like, and ranked it. We ranked, you know, the movie, and eventually got snowballed into, we made a board in our basement, and, you know, we started watching a bunch of movies and ranking it and averaging out the scores and kind of keeping it posted up on a board is something kind of fun to do. And, you know, Sports Illustrated heard about it and thought it was a pretty funny story.
Hmm. With all the practices you must have for basketball, all the games, and then also the academics, that's a pretty full schedule. And then to be the Siskel and Eberts of the Panther team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of a way for us to unwind. Like you said, we spend a lot of time, you know, in class and working on practice. And, you know, outside of that, we just kind of like to be lazy and just kind of hang out. I guess that's just one way to do it, is to hang out with, you know, your buddies and watch a movie to kind of relax and unwind.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how did you make sure that the exposure in the Sports Illustrated didn't change your team's winning game? Did you have a talk about that, for instance, before going out on the court in the locker room? So sort of come down out of the clouds, guys. Let's keep our winning game the way it's always been. This doesn't change anything.
You know, I think, like Coach said, we've got a lot of older guys on this team. So I think as a team we do a pretty good job of staying level-headed and not getting too excited about something like that. I mean, it's nice for us, but, you know, we know what it means. It doesn't mean too much, you know, right now for helping our team win games. So I think we do a pretty good job of just not really getting on too much of a high off of that.
Okay. Adam, how many copies have you bought so far?
I got one copy, but I've had a couple people give me some other copies of it just to make sure I have it, you know. So
okay.
I'll be set on that.
Okay. Ben Jacobson, Coach Jacobson, how many copies do you have and how many are framed already?
Yeah, none framed already, but my wife did go out and picked up a few copies of it the other day.
All right, well deserved. Let's go to an email from Jeff in Iowa City. Jeff wonders if you can comment on the success some of the mid-major conferences are having and some of the challenges coaches at the major schools experience. An example, your predecessor, Greg McDermott, had success with the Panthers and has struggled somewhat in Ames. University of Iowa coach Todd Licklider has struggled in Iowa City since his successful year with Butler. But from your vantage point as a mid-major coach, can you describe the differences?
Well, you know, I guess I can you know, talk about what it's like to be at this level. Not having coached in a BCS conference, I don't have that experience to fall back on. You know, at this level, you do have some real challenges when it comes to finding a way into the NCAA tournament. You know, I think that the Missouri Valley Conference is terrific. You look at the Atlantic 10 and the Mountain West and the Horizon League where Coach Licklider was with Butler. You know, very good basketball and some very good teams and some terrific players. And you see it in the non-conference portion of the schedule with some of the teams in the leagues that I mentioned when they do have an opportunity to play against BCS schools and able to win some of those basketball games. And there just aren't a lot of those opportunities out there. You'll get some of those games on a neutral floor. We're fortunate that we do have a series ourselves, and Drake have a series with Iowa and Iowa State. So, you know, that's something that not very many mid-major programs have, and so we're real fortunate to get games with the Big Ten and a Big 12 school every year, and have one of those be on our home floor. But the challenges come when you get into league play. The league is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to drop a few games, you get toward the end of the season, you know, there aren't a lot of spots right now in the NCAA tournament for mid-majors. There's 4 to 6 spots that have gone to the mid-majors of the at-large spots. So, you know, that's the biggest challenge, you know, and I think that's an exciting challenge. I think that's something that our guys, you know, they look forward to the challenge of playing every night, and they have fun playing every night. And because of that, these guys have done well.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you get to play right alongside your brother, Jake, isn't that right?
Yep. Jake's on the team here. He's a freshman.
So what's it like? I mean, playing some pickup games back in Wisconsin to now being on the court at UNI. Is he just any other player out on the court, or is he always kind of specially marked as your brother out there?
You know, I think from my perspective, it's always kind of like he's my brother, but I think most of the guys, you know, he's just another one of the guys on the team. You know, it's a pretty neat experience for me to be able to play with them here. I know I didn't get a chance in high school to play any basketball with them or on a team with them. So to have that chance now in college is pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what are you studying at the University of Northern Iowa and right now?
I'm a biology major with a pre-med emphasis.
Mm-hmm. And so your plans for post-college career?
Hopefully I will get into some kind of grad school, either medical or dental school, within the next couple of years and try to go down that route.
Mm-hmm. But is that the second choice? But the first choice, professional basketball?
Yeah, I mean, that would be fun. I guess I'll try and see where that goes after this year. You know, it'd be fun to keep playing as long as I can. But, you know, I hopefully will have that education to fall back on.
Okay. Questions for Coach Jacobson or Adam Cook of the very successful Panthers team, the basketball team this year, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. George in Waterloo writes an email, Coach Jacobson, I read the NCAA that the NCAA is considering expanding the men's tournament to 96 teams. Coach, if this comes to fruition, is it a good move? Another example of TV dictating college sports, asks George in Waterloo.
Yeah, you know, my personal feeling is I really like it the way it is. You know, it's I think one of the most exciting and best college or best sporting events throughout the course of the entire year, I'd like to see it stay. And it is as I talked about previously, it's difficult to get there, but I think that's what makes it so special is when you have the right kind of year and you're able to find your way into the NCAA tournament, you know, there isn't another experience like that. And you know, for our guys to experience that last year was terrific, and I've been to four of them now, and every year seems to be more exciting and more fun, and it's something your community can rally around. And I'd hate to expand it too far. You go to 96 or you go to 128 or you know, some numbers that have been thrown out there, and now it waters it down a little bit when we've got what I think is the best sporting event across the board, professional or in college, because of the excitement that goes on for the 3 to 4 weeks in March. And so my personal feeling is that you know, I'd like for it to stay at 65. Now, I've read the reasons and heard you know, people talk about why it should be expanded, and you know, there's some legitimate concerns, but you know, from a basketball standpoint, you know, I love it because it's hard to get there, and it's so rewarding when you do.
Mm-hmm. So what about the comment, George, the follow-up question about this possibly being TV dictating college sports? You know, that's the case here?
Yeah, that's part of it, although there is some support from coaches as well. You know, our job is to put a product on the floor that can play in the NCAA tournament. And if there's 96 spots as opposed to 65, well, you've got 30 more ADs and 30 more communities and 30 more groups that are going to be supportive of you, because that's part of our job is to put a basketball team on the floor that can compete at a high level. So there's all, you know, there is some support from the coaches as well to have more spots there. Also, now you've included 30 more teams, and so those players and their families and those students, you've included more people. So, again, there are some legitimate aspects to it, and I'm sure that from the NCAA standpoint that TV and the revenues from that certainly play a part in their discussions.
Coach, you mentioned earlier on in our discussion several times the word chemistry being really great in your present team here. What goes into chemistry? Can you define it any closer than that word chemistry? It's hard to define, I grant it you, but tell us more about what goes into that.
Boy, one of the things I've found out. Which maybe lends a little bit to answering your question. I really look forward to going to practice. I really look forward to getting on the bus. I really look forward to getting on the plane. I really look forward to playing the games. And I think the biggest reason is because of the way that these guys interact, the way that they you know, stick up for each other, the way in which they play at both ends of the floor, you know, unselfish on offense and really work. Their teamwork defensively is very good to cover up for each other. So certainly much more than the X's and O's, and a lot to do with how they are, again, when you get on the bus or you go to a team meal. Their chemistry is very good in all of those areas. And, you know, I've been a part of some teams as a player and as an assistant coach and even as a head coach where, the chemistry wasn't at the level that it's been now for 2 years with this group. And you don't look forward quite as much to going to practice or getting on the bus or getting on the plane. And, you know, as much as you look forward to the competition and working hard to get better and be prepared and all those things that you love to do, there's something about this group, the chemistry of this group, the way that they interact with each other, and that really makes you look forward to doing whatever it is, practice, getting on the plane, whatever it might be.
Yeah, Coach Jacobson, did you recognize this special chemistry before the Panthers this year stepped onto the court for the very first time?
Because we had so many guys back from last year. You know, this group kind of started almost 2 years ago now, the beginning of last year. Ali Farouk Manesh was new as a junior to our program. Johnny Moran was new as a freshman. Adam and Jordan and Kerwin Dunham and Lucas O'Rear and Kajou, some of those guys had been in our program but in very different roles. And so we had some work to do to get things sorted out. And Travis Brown and Carlton Reed, those guys did a terrific job as seniors. And once we won a couple basketball games, I really liked how we were how we practiced and the chemistry of the group October, November, December. But we were 500 at the end of December a year ago. But I still really enjoyed going to practice because the chemistry of the group was very good and they worked very hard. And mm-hmm. once we won a couple games and they gained some confidence, then it really started to show through. And I think our fans have really grabbed onto that. They now are a part of the team chemistry and they can see what these guys are made of. So it's been a 2 year process, and these guys have done a great job with it.
Adam Cook, you're the senior forward for the Panthers, 6'8", 255 pounds, according to the information that I have. Do you have a different variation on how you define chemistry? What's going well about your team?
No, you know, I think Coach summed it up pretty well, just saying that, you know, coming to practice every day and all that stuff that goes with being on this team, it's something that you look forward to. You don't think, oh, you know, I got practice later in the day. You know, I'm not really excited for that at all. But, you know, when we go into it, you know, it's exciting to be around, you know, the rest of the guys, the coaches. It's fun for us. So I think that makes it a lot easier to, you know, to go into practice and know that it's going to be fun. We'll get a lot of work done and just kind of enjoying that whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Coach Jacobson, are there, as good as you are this year, are there still weaknesses you want to work the kinks out of?
Oh, I don't know that this group has what I would term as weaknesses. This group is pretty solid in all areas. Now there's a couple areas that we feel like we need to continue to get better at, and one of them is at the offensive end of the floor with our player movement and the way that we're doing some things offensively. And I thought we did a much better job on this past Sunday against Indiana State. I thought the guys did a great job of playing at the offensive end of the floor in the second half and really making it tough for Indiana State. And so we're making improvements at the offensive end of the floor. And then I'm sure Adam would tell you or any of the guys in the team, you know, defensively and rebounding, I don't know that I'm ever completely happy with the way we're doing things there. And these guys have been good at the defensive end, and we've rebounded the ball well. But I think we can still find some improvement in both those areas because those two areas really give you a chance to win each day.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what would you say sets Coach Jacobson apart from other coaches? Does he have a particular knack, tick on the court or during practice that your team knows him for?
You know, I think the biggest thing is we all have a lot of trust in Coach Jake and, you know, what he tells us to do offensively, defensively. You know, we take it from him and, you know, we try to do our best to do what he asks. And, you know, he's got a lot of sets, a lot of plays on offense that he can come up with, you know, a good look for us, you know, pretty much at any time. And then defensively, you know, we really trust what Coach Jake, you know, and the rest of the coaching staff has for our game plans and, you know, what we're going to go out and execute against the other teams. And I think it's easy for us to play for them that way.
Mm-hmm. Coach Jacobson, is this the beginning of a UNI dynasty coming up? How does the recruiting looking?
We signed three guys early and three guys that we really like. You know, this started, you know, 9 years ago when Greg McDermott got the job the first 3 years were a lot of work put in by a lot of people, and he's really the one that got this whole thing started. Mm-hmm. And they're fortunate to go to three NCAA tournaments in a row under his leadership. And since that time, the guys have done a good job. We've had some good seasons, and You know, we'd like to be consistent is what, you know, what we talk about and really what Mac started 9 years ago and you know, what this group has done the past 2 years. We'd like to be consistent and see if we can play at a high level every year and represent our university and our community the right way on and off the floor. And these guys have done a great job of that.
Mm-hmm. How would you say that your game has improved the most over the past 4 years at UNI?
You know, we're much better, much more consistent defensively this past year and a half than we were for the first 2 years when I was our head coach. We were good defensively, but not as consistent. And then we've just got a much more versatile team at the offensive end of the floor right now. We've got a couple of new guys, and then Adam and Jordan, and a couple of these guys that are juniors and seniors now have just worked extremely hard to just be better players. So you know, we've got some good players right now because they've worked hard.
Okay, last question for you, Adam Cook, as the Siskel and Ebert of the Panther team. Are there any sleeper movies out there, underrated films that we should run out and see?
Oh man, you know. We watch mostly old ones that we haven't seen. You know, we try to find ones that none of the three of us have seen before. So there are a lot of older ones that we like. But for newer
There's that great basketball film with Gene Hackman. What's that one called?
Yeah,
Hoosiers.
That's a good movie. That's a classic. Definitely one that we all enjoyed.
We have to go. I want to thank you very much for joining us. UNI basketball coach, men's basketball coach, Ben Jacobson, Adam Cook. We wish you continued success when we go on to the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament up in the beginning of March and possibly the NCAA Tournament. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Jeff Schmidt, our producer assistant today, Christoph Mai. And we always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.